And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I cannot get the microphone to stay put. Oh, there we go. Okay, I think I have it. Took me a while to use my massive opposing thumb shrink, but I got it done. Last day in the month of March. Glad to be with you today. Here's a little tidbit for you. I got this from Julian Whitaker, MD. It's about hibiscus tea. You know, sometimes the only options that a person are given or will be given if they have high blood pressure is just take a medication. Well, listen to this. Hibiscus tea for blood pressure. It's packed with several protective polyphenols. This rich red tea has the power to keep the blood pressure in healthy ranges to a degree similar to that of prescription drugs. That's not a bad deal, is it? You know what I just realized? I'm not recording this. Let me start over. Hibiscus tea for blood pressure. Packed with several protective polyphenols, this rich red tea has the power to keep blood pressure in healthy ranges to a degree similar to that of prescription drugs. In a recent study, participants with systolic blood pressure over 129 millimeters per mercury, which is probably what most people have if you're over 60, when they drank 3 cups a day of hibiscus tea for 6 weeks, they experienced an average of 14 millimeters of mercury reduction in systolic blood pressure. So if your blood pressure is 150 over 90, well, the top number is going to go down to 135, give or take. All right, now let me see if I can find this. This week, a gentleman told me a story, and I have chosen to believe every single bit of it, but I found this article, Knowledge of Health, Bill Sardi. And it's about a very bad news type of infection that is becoming all too common. You think it only occurs in the hospitals, only with people that have antibiotic therapy? No, this is taking over nursing homes. And I'm telling you, this is just the tip of the iceberg, folks. The title of the article is Clostridium difficile, sometimes it's called C. diff. He calls it the Count Dracula bacterium. It is fast becoming a household word. All right, this was just posted March 23rd. As deadly as Clostridium difficile infection is, just like Count Dracula, just take that with a grain of salt, folks, who is vulnerable to garlic and sunlight, so is this pervasive bacterium. What modern medicine is unwilling to say is that there is that the digestive tract of every human being harbors a potentially mortal soil organism that is killing off a growing number of Americans. They're just saying you have it in you already. It's already there. A recent report says Clostridium difficile infection is not new, but it is posing more problems than ever before. People aren't suddenly infected by C. diff via contact with pets and foods and human-to-human transfer of this bug. They already have it as part of the makeup of the 100 trillion organisms that inhabit the human gut. And they go on to say that a healthy digestive tract, it actually resists the growth of C. diff. Only an abundance of various families of healthy gut bacteria protects against a raging infection. I mean, you already know what I'm saying, don't you? The idea is introducing probiotics and prebiotics and eating foods that encourage the growth of the really beneficial bacteria. It says antibiotics provoke rather than control C. diff. If you've ever heard of a person having a C. diff infection, oh my word, it's usually after they had a round of antibiotics. The bacterium erupts and produces symptoms after sterilization of the digestive tract by antibiotics when there are no opposing bacteria to keep in check. With, you can get this number right here, with 269.4 million antibiotic prescriptions in the U.S. in 2017, that's a whole lot of opportunity for a potentially lethal germ to produce a long list of agonizing symptoms for a lot of people. It says here, this is going to blow you away, C. diff amounts to about $3 billion of associated expenses per year. In particular, there's three antibiotics, ampicillin, amoxicillin, and cephalexin, which is Keflex. They provoke spores to erupt from the C. diff bacteria in the intestines. You know, that may not be thought-provoking, but the next time you're prescribed amoxicillin or Keflex or ampicillin, if you start having severe diarrhea and gastrointestinal pain, maybe you cause C. diff to erupt. Between 20 and 35% of patients treated with antibiotics, they will fail with the initial antibiotic treatment. But antibiotic resistance can occur. So then these patients are out of luck. Now get this right here. This is what the man told me. He said while he was in the rehab hospital, he contracted C. diff. And the only remedy that proved powerful was he had a fecal bacterial transplantation from his son. And I think I told him, and I was completely wrong on the number. I told him I had read that it was 95% effective. Well, here's a study right here saying, when all else fails in treating a C. diff infection, there is the transplantation of healthy fecal bacteria, and it's only 92% effective. 92! You know, that makes me wonder, if antibiotics are so poor at knocking this stuff out, why don't they start with the most effective treatment of all time, which is finding a relative that has healthy microbes and place it into the bowels of the sick person with C. diff? I think the cure rate is 95% in one day. That's just phenomenal. Okay. Oh, this is the other part that gets me right here. It says, one study shows the most common routes of transmission are contact with symptomatic carriers. That means if you have a church member whose husband is in the hospital with C. diff, and they're going back and forth to visit their husband, and that you shake hands with them, well, guess what? You may be exposed to C. diff. It says C. diff carriers with symptoms are 15 times more likely to transmit this germ to others than non-symptomatic. And there's a growing concern that non-symptomatic carriers are spreading C. diff outside the hospital. Okay. Where is the one that I wanted to get to? I mean, this just really got my attention. Okay. No, I'm going to skip that. No, well, no. Okay, here we go. I think week before last I talked about zinc. And here's the article. Zinc supplementation favorably alters the gut bacteria and it decreases antibiotic resistance to C. diff. That's all I'm saying. If you have enough zinc, guess what? You overcome C. diff. It says, be aware, and this is a report that's contrary to what I'm saying. It says, be aware, there are contrary reports warning the public away from high-dose zinc when battling C. diff. Well, here's what the study showed. Those reports were based upon the study where laboratory animals were given 1,000 milligrams of zinc per kilogram. That means they were given 1,000 milligrams of zinc for every 2.2 pounds they weighed of body weight. Or the human equivalent would be 2,030 milligram zinc pills. Who's going to take 2,030 milligram zinc pills? Anada Prasad, the world's leading authority on zinc, Nourisher, says, up to 45 milligrams of supplemental zinc can be consumed safely without upsetting the zinc-copper balance in the body. And it said, by the way, zinc is widely used to quell diarrhea in children. And then when they give it to elderly people, it reduces the amount of infections they have. Oh, here's the part I want to get to. Even if you don't hear anything else that I'm talking about this morning, this might get your attention. It says that Clostridium difficile should be characterized as the Count Dracula of microorganisms because it's quelled by garlic and sunlight. The medical literature shows that the rising rate of C. diff infections and deaths, they parallel the sun phobia created by the dermatology industry to prevent skin cancer. Listen to this right here. Hospitalized elderly patients with low vitamin D blood levels, they are 5 times more likely to develop C. diff-related diarrhea. which means they ought to be adding vitamin D to any anti-diarrheal preparations they're giving the patients. This also means that every hospitalized patient should be screened for vitamin D levels upon admission. This is interesting also. Hospital infectious disease officers must know that C. diff is seasonal. What I'm saying is there's one particular time of the year it's more apt to occur. It occurs more often in early spring, after winter, when people spend more time indoors and when the earth tilts away from the sun in the northern hemisphere during the winter. Vitamin D is produced naturally in the skin by midday sun exposure. Hospitalized patients with blood levels of vitamin D below 10 nanograms per milliliter of blood serum, that's 1,000 nanograms per deciliter, they were found to be 4.96 times greater risk for C. diff, infection and diarrhea. We might as well just round that up to 5 times. They got the mortality rate. Now, this is what I thought was interesting also. It says, while this is untested, they're just talking about using Pepto-Bismol. When they took Pepto-Bismol plus water and they passed through a cloth for filtration, it creates soluble bismuth that has an activity against C. diff and prevents this bacterium from sticking to the wall of the intestines. Now, I read a lot of stuff all the time, but I think I have made a mental note. Pepto-Bismol plus water gives you soluble bismuth that has activity against C. diff that prevents the bacteria from sticking to the wall of the intestines. What are you going to do if the power went out one weekend from a bad storm and you're stuck and you have diarrhea? You think you might consider Pepto-Bismol? I mean, you can buy it over the counter, right? Now, you may not know this, but there's plenty of research now showing that the use of antacids, which are widely employed to relieve heartburn symptoms, they are particularly troublesome as they negate the stomach hydrochloric acid that kills off the incoming C. diff when we consume vegetables that are grown in the ground, which Clostridium difficile is just a common soil organism. Sometimes I think about gardeners. So here's the antacids, Nexium, Prevacid, Prilosec. They are widely promoted for heartburn, but when they provoke a C. diff eruption, well, those drugs can be life-threatening. They're saying warnings now should be added to antacid labels. One hospital instituted a program to reduce antacid use, and they reported a 20% reduction in C. diff. Can you believe that? One hospital, boy, they have it going on. They told the people that are coming in that are sick with gut issues, stop taking antacids, and there was a 20% reduction in C. diff. Well, what if it was your mother or your father or sister or brother or uncle or aunt or child that had an infection? That would come in pretty handy. It says here that C. diff infection rates also rise with the use of antihistamines, as histamine is required for stomach acid secretion. And there's a lot of stuff in here. There's even more. Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. If you want to call in, now is your chance to do so. And if you don't, man, I'm going to start unloading. I'm going to drop the bomb on you with more information. I did read an article, and I don't have it in front of me this morning, and it was saying for people that have really, really bad nasal allergies, and of course, all you have to do is just walk outside and there's yellow dust everywhere. Let's go to the phone lines first. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm calling on behalf of a friend. She's having severe acid reflux. She's very slim. She has no issues with digestion. Before this, that she could eat anything, but now she's having that, but she's trying to go through the doctors, which are trying to put her on these antacids. Could you speak on what can be done for naturally?
Is she going through a tremendous amount of stress right now?
No.
Okay, so her life is stress-free. She's not eating a ton of chocolate and Cokes and coffee.
No.
Okay. One simple thing that she can do right now is she can practice just eating one apple a day and see if pretty quick that starts to go away.
Okay.
The other thing that I like very much is just drinking water. And, of course, it's a discipline. The first thing you do, or the first thing I would recommend that she does when she wakes up in the morning, is drink a glass of water and see if that helps tremendously.
Okay, and if she has, like sometimes she eats and she has this major pain in her stomach, I mean her...
Well, is it up high by the rib cage where the stomach kind of passes through the diaphragm?
I think it is.
I mean, the simple thing that she could have right now is what's called a hiatal hernia. I mean, those are just so painful, so irritating. They can almost mimic a heart attack or create chest pain where you just have this undeniable pain that's just very, very annoying. The old remedy was... I'm sorry?
They have had it done that when they wrote the scope inside, and so they haven't seen anything, couldn't find anything, the doctors.
Does she have pain that pierces through to her back?
That I don't know.
Okay, well, let me just tell you what I would do, and I realize I may not be able to figure it all out, but these are two or three things that she can try just very, very easily right now. When you have horrible acid reflux, maybe she could just practice not eating any meat other than just apples and salads today. Or actually, soups would be one of the easiest things in the stomach. Try to drink about twice as much water as she normally does. She could try drinking a cup of chamomile tea and see if that resolves it. One remedy that I will incorporate when someone's on the way to the ER complaining of horrible stomach pain is just have them stop at the store and buy some aloe vera juice and start drinking a shot glass of that every 15 minutes to see if the pain goes away. And I would rather spend $5 on a remedy that works than $5,000. Never mind. I wish I hadn't said that. So aloe vera juice is something that she can try right now. But I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I will. But I had a very stressful day this week. I didn't like it. And my stomach started hurting a little bit. You know what I did? Mrs. Lau gave me a plastic canister with a kind of a screw-on lid of clay. You know what clay is? Bentonite clay?
Yes, sir.
And so I took a water bottle and I took a spoon. I shoveled maybe a teaspoon and a half in because I was sick of it. I was ready to knock it out real fast. Shook up the bottle of water. There must have been like 5 ounces tops, and I chugged it down. And guess what happened to my pain in my stomach?
Went away.
Gone. Completely. And so I am a huge fan of clay. It's called living earth or hydrophilic, but that stuff is spectacular for healing acid reflux.
Okay.
So she can do that. The last thing that I would say, that probably because there are so many studies that show that people don't have this horrible pain until they take a prescription of antibiotics sometimes. Now, I don't know if she's had a round of antibiotics even back at Christmas time for strep throat or an infection of some kind. But it would be a really good idea for her to start taking some type of beneficial microbe or bacteria like a probiotic.
Okay.
And you can get those just about anywhere.
All right.
Now tell me the truth. Why do you love her so much?
She's a dear friend.
Oh, okay. Good enough.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope that helps. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Happy Easter. The number is once again open, or the phone line is once again open at 903-586-5257. I think sometimes we become confused as physicians. We want to give a diagnosis instead of trying to find out what the symptoms mean. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing good. Nice to hear your deal every Saturday.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a bunch.
My question concerns a situation called a pulmonary hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, what symptoms do you exhibit, if that's for sure what's going on?
Well, you're not going to be able to walk around the block real fast with a lot of air and energy. Okay. Do you have that or somebody else?
No, it's me.
Well, let me tell you one thing that I read on the radio this morning, and it involves a vitamin called vitamin K2.
Okay.
And it was not, the study was not done on men. It was done on women. But the idea of hypertension, whether it's, regardless of where it occurs in the body, but pulmonary hypertension is when you have increased stiffness of the pulmonary vessels that relate to the lungs. But in this study, what they did was they measured the amount of vitamin K2, and that's a fat-soluble vitamin or nutrient. Sometimes it comes from fermented foods, like if you like to eat Gouda cheese from Holland, then that will have vitamin K2 in it. And so vitamin K2 in these women, it caused all the arteries to become more flexible and more spry and more supple. And I'm telling you, that is the name of the game with pulmonary hypertension. You're trying to get the arteries to become more flexible and more elastic and springy like they used to be. Because anytime the arteries anywhere in the body start to become stiff and rigid, and you start developing calcium deposits and cholesterol deposits, boy, every system has to work harder. Can you imagine what the heart has to do to push against all that resistance? And that's what you want. So vitamin K2 is one of the things that I would definitely think of. One of my most favorite herbal remedies of all time. I'm just so partial to hawthorn because I just see it work over and over and over and over again.
Okay.
Is there any chance that your iron levels are too high?
Oh, I see the doctor pretty often, though. If it were that way...
Well, can I tell you?
Sure know it.
Well, let me tell you what I want you to look for. There is an abbreviation. It's called HCT, called hematocrit. Your blood is going to be pretty much too thick if that's 46 or above. So you might just go back and peruse your lab work and see what that number is. But you want your hematocrit to be more like about 41, 42. I mean, studies show that the risk of a heart attack doubles if you go from 42 up to 48. And so I think those numbers mean something. And and your glucose levels, I would be much more comfortable if your blood sugar was like at 75 to 80 as opposed to 95 to 100. Because any time that your blood sugar goes up, your pancreas has to increase its production of insulin. And insulin is one of the greatest ways to cause your arteries to age and to become more stiff.
Mm-hmm. So I think that knocks out Blueville ice cream, doesn't it?
No. I want you to get hawthorn garlic fish oil flavored Blueville. That's a new flavor. They're calling it Dr. Morgan.
All right.
It's not a top seller yet, but by this afternoon it could hit at least 1 gallon sold. No, and actually garlic has been shown to cause your arteries, even the pulmonary arteries, to become more spry and flexible.
Right.
I mean, unless, has the doctor explained to you the exact mechanism or the reason why you have the pulmonary hypertension?
Well, the most suspicious thing could have possibly been obstructive sleep apnea. Refer to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, are you on...
Now, I'm on the treatment now. I have a breathing machine.
What do you think about it?
Oh, I've gotten used to it now. It's fine.
Do you notice any substantial improvement in your sleep quality since you've been using it?
Yes, I do. I still have to take a drug called Seroquel, so I sleep well, but I sleep all through the night. I don't wake up to go to the bathroom at all, urinating, I mean.
Either that's a puppy in the background or somebody's got the squeakiest wheel on a sewing machine I've ever heard before.
My wife got this, let me call it stupid little.
Well, what kind of a dog is it?
It's a breed. There's a bunch of little tiny, I mean, this thing's just tiny, tiny. There's some Chihuahua in it. You know, it's a mixed breed.
So you don't leave any open rat traps set around the kitchen floor, do you?
We've got a huge, great big, it's a big dog that could swallow that thing in two bites, like my neighbor said. Well, I think I'm going to give her a chance to do it.
Well, what you should do is rub peanut butter all over her.
Hey, there you go.
That's a joke. I'm just teasing about that. But your wife loves this little dog, doesn't she? What's the dog's name, by the way?
Well, you're going to get a kick out of this. The name is Ike.
Ike?
But it's a female.
Well, I like Ike.
Yeah. I like Ike. I don't know what Ike would think about that, naming a female Ike.
Well, it's probably some Greek goddess named Ikeic. That's just real funny. Well, this can turn on its hinges. Let me tell you the things that I would think of as far as supplements, and I realize this might be an oversimplification, but vitamin K2 I think is going to be essential. Huge fan of magnesium, cod liver oil, and hawthorn. You're going to go a long, long way. And there's a mineral called zinc. I always think about zinc if I'm trying to remove any type of hardened, crusty, calcified cholesterol from the arteries, even the pulmonary arteries. But to me, you just cannot go wrong by eating real food. It's really hard not to recommend high sulfur vegetables. So that's going to be kale and broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and asparagus. Did I mention radishes yet?
No.
You know, and doctors a lot of times, they just hate the idea of eggs, but eggs are a great source of sulfur. I am just convinced the more that I study, there's nothing wrong with eggs. Eggs are great for you.
Well, that's wonderful because, you know, I've avoided eggs all my life because I think of it as something that's going to shoot up my cholesterol.
It's not going to do that. Garlic and onions are high in sulfur.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're not eating eggs, they're probably going to serve you banana blueberry muffins for breakfast, right?
Well, it sounds pretty good. Now I'm going to have my wife start making this.
Now, how much chocolate do you give Ike every day?
Hardly none.
Hardly.
Well, let's put it this way: if I get close to it, I have a fit for it. But anyway, so I just and yesterday I just went to the store and stared at Bluebell. I didn't buy any, but I just stared at it.
Was Ike with you? I see people bring their dogs into the store now. It's no. Have you ever been to that store called Atwood's?
Yes.
Sometimes
get our dog food.
Sometimes I go in there on my lunch break. I look at the guineas and the ducks and the chickens. I just think they're so cute. But people are forever bringing their animals in there. Some people put them in their shopping cart or leave them in their purses. It's just hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're bonding.
Well, that breed, I just thought of it. It's Boxer Pit Bull is the big dog that's in the house.
And that's the one that can jump straight up like a pogo stick.
And she could probably inhale that dog in about 3 bites.
Well, you know what? Accidents do happen. I mean, if you walk from the kitchen to the living room, you're not responsible, are you?
No. We're introducing them gradually. So.
Well, no. I think we just need to jump in all four paws in the lake. See what happens. Well, I wish you the very best, but the reason we're talking about these things is I want your pulmonary hypertension to completely reverse. And one thing that I would recommend, if you're not used to singing in the shower, maybe you should start singing in the shower just to exercise the lungs.
Okay, yeah, I love singing.
Okay.
And I've got a good strong voice. In the matter of walking around the block, I've got an exercise machine downstairs. I exercise on it. I don't get out of breath. I went to Colorado this year and skied 2 weeks at 11,000-12,000 feet.
How did Ike do on the downhill slope?
Well, Ike just came to our house 2 days ago.
Oh, gotcha.
That's why she's making so much noise, I guess.
What is she like, about 8 weeks old?
No, she's 8 months old.
We
brought her here because my wife felt like she needed a home, and she needed to be neutered, and so that's been done.
Well, your wife is probably right again.
So she wanted a little dog in comparison to our huge dog.
Well, how do you know this is not a ferret? Could the dog actually be a ferret, not a chihuahua?
A parrot with four legs. Okay, all right.
Well, I wish you the very best, and I hope this resolves itself very quickly.
Thank you so much for your help there.
You're welcome. I enjoyed visiting with you today. Have a good Easter, buddy.
Okay. All
thanks,
right.
Bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
All right. There's a phone line once again open. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I just wanted to let you know I came to see you in February, and I need to see you again, but I came...
Are you the hospice nurse?
Yes.
Oh, well, looky there. I remembered your voice.
Yeah, with the AFib, and I just want you to know... And I'll start taking your supplements, and I'm running out, so I'm going to come see you again.
Well, how's the AFib?
I had not had one episode since.
Are you, would you not make up a story on the radio? Don't you know people are listening? That's good.
I tell everybody at work, yes, and I had not one episode, not absolutely one. I am just, think you deserve
the
great support
you,
here.
Well, you're great. Thanks.
Yeah, and I will see you soon because I'm starting to run out of those wonderful supplements, and you told me to take some of them 3 times a day, and I've been doing all that.
Well, great. I'm real proud of you. I think I have currently about 6 hospice nurses that come to see me. They're just the best.
That's my fault. I apologize.
No. Don't apologize because what happened was one of them came to see me not that long ago, and she said she was the one that said to come to see me, told you to come see me.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to you for years, and she had come to you with her daughter a while back.
Now, which one was that? Was that Regina?
Yes, Regina. Matter of fact, I've worked with her yesterday.
Yeah, we won't mention her last name, but she's probably in bed sleeping right now. She's not listening.
Right. Either that or she's at work.
Probably at work.
No, and so we're telling everybody, and yeah. And so I just wanted you to know.
Oh, you're so kind. You made my day.
Absolutely.
Keep up
the
good work. I'm so proud of you for at least kind of accepting what I said on faith and taking and doing it.
Oh, absolutely. I've been listening to you for years. I just hadn't come see you since I saw you in February.
Well, I'm glad your AFib is resolved.
It's never had another episode, and you have no idea. I got thousands of dollars worth of medical bills on my desk because of the ambulance ride.
Would you tell the listeners those thousands of dollars of bills are not from me?
No, they're not from you.
I'm joking.
But I tell you what they charge for a mile is unbelievable.
Well, I'm really proud of you, and you have really blessed me today. Thank you for your kind words.
Oh, you are welcome. And like I said, I come see you soon. So.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Okay, you're welcome.
Have a great weekend. Happy Easter.
Thank you, and happy Easter to you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. All right, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. All right, I just got some feedback. I just found out she's better. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Thank you for your call.
Okay. My question is about eczema. It tends to run in our family. My daughter hadn't suffered with it till she was like in middle school. But she's 20 now, and she's fine. But it hasn't come back. But now both of my sisters have grandbabies that are suffering terribly with it. And
oh, bless her
they
heart.
They are breastfed, and I've told them, you know, maybe you need to cut out the grains. Maybe you need fish oil. Maybe you need to give them, you need to take probiotics.
Oh, yeah, you're giving great advice.
Because both of them are breastfed, but it's just they scratch. And
well, was there any chance that the mama had an episiotomy when the baby was born? Any
I
of
know.
Them C-sections?
No.
Were they just normal vaginal births like at a midwife birthing center or at home?
No, they were in the hospital.
Well, I mean, and I don't want to be critical by saying this, but if you heard me read that article earlier about that bad news diarrhea-inducing infection that kills people called C. diff, that's where you get it. It's in the hospital. And so when you go to the hospital, you always run the risk of contracting some type of bacterium. Anyway, enough of that. Let me tell you two or three things here that I think about eczema, because I want this to be completely solved where they have just drop-dead, gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful skin. If there's any possibility that mama is eating or consuming any type of dairy products, and I'm not trying to be mean or an evil ogre by, you know, demanding they don't have any dairy, but that's going to pass right through the breast milk. And I'm just going to tell you, that's just one of the biggest triggers that I find day in and day out when it comes to eczema and babies.
Okay.
And so if they're breastfed, those proteins may come through the breast milk, and then the immune system is going to start generating antibodies against it. And if those antibodies settle near the skin, that's where the battle takes place, and you get that very red, inflamed skin.
Well, I have not thought about the milk.
Well, just think about the mama drinking milk, not the baby so much. I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
Okay, yeah,
they're
yeah.
not eating food yet.
And then the other thing that I would consider is if anyone's going to take the fish oil or the zinc, it needs to be the mama.
Right.
And if anybody's going to take the mega doses of probiotics, it needs to be mama and baby.
Okay.
Now, this is only my opinion, so you can take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, if you were to go to the store and say, you know what, I'm looking for a probiotic for a baby, and you might see, you know, all these different dosages, and this might be a little bit controversial, but usually with babies with eczema, I almost always have to use an adult-strength probiotic to get the job done. Not always, but I'd say most of the time I do. So I'm always trying to identify, is there a hidden food allergy like a dairy allergy? And that sort of makes sense to you now, right?
Yes, it does. I thought about the grains and maybe they deficient in fatty acids, and I told them about essential oils, and nothing seemed to help.
Well, I mean, mama could take evening primrose oil or black currant seed oil, cod liver oil, tuna fish oil, flaxseed oil. Sometimes I'll give a mother milk thistle if I think that it just, and maybe I'll say this the right way and it won't sound negative. We're just trying to clean up foreign proteins in the milk. That's what milk thistle would do. And all the mom would take all these things. And so those would be the first things that I would try. And then on top of that, if there's like a particularly rough red area, you might just try plantain golden seal salve. It's kind of a greenish, yellowish salve, like if a baby had a horrible diaper rash, that's what you'd rub on it, plantain golden seal. The plantain almost looks like a banana. Probably is a banana that grows in South America. Have you heard of the plantain? I lost you. Yeah, I can tell. I just lost the phone. Sorry about that. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Hello, Dr. Morgan here.
Well, I finally got a phone to answer.
Yeah.
I've got a good one for you.
I like it.
Okay, I want to know if you have had any experience with Sjogren's syndrome.
Yes, and there was an article published back in 1996, and it said that out of all the treatments that were available to help improve the eyes, that cod liver oil was more effective than almost anything else for Sjogren's syndrome. But this is an autoimmune disease that affects those lubricating glands of the eye.
I've had it 8 years.
Well, we got to find out what the trigger is, because there's always a trigger, and so I'm just going to guess here. All the cases of Sjogren's that I've seen, I bet you 80% of the time that if they eat wheat, they're asking for it.
I don't.
Good.
I quit that. In the meantime of the 8 years, I had Alzheimer's husband 8 years, too, on the side. So
what was the second thing you said?
My husband had Alzheimer's for 8 years.
Oh, boy. So you were... You get you are the greatest woman of all time. You were completely devoted to him.
He just died in January.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry for your loss.
So I'm just I cannot read. Reading bothers me more than anything. I can write. I can drive. Right now, I've gone through a really bad time with it, and they've been putting me on steroids.
Well, can I give you some ideas?
Right now, I'm on Lodamax, and I'm on my 1 week.
Okay. I'm telling you what I would do. I'm not telling you to do this, but if it were me, I would try one drop of castor oil in each eye right before I go to bed. I'd blink several times.
Castor oil? Okay. I remember my mother giving me that with orange juice in a cup, and I cannot drink anything out of a cup.
Are you saying you have some harsh childhood memories from castor oil? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I was raised on a farm. I mean, everything had castor oil. If you needed it, it went in an orange juice and a
Shouldn't
cup.
You be and grateful to your mama right now for all her loving care?
I juice out of a cup. I cannot.
So you're saying there could be a slight aversion to a cup of orange juice?
Plain old castor oil, a drop?
Yeah.
Does it come in drops or do you make your own?
No, but just make your own. I mean, make your own. what I meant to say was, you might just take a straw and dip in the castor oil and put your finger on the end of it and hold it over your eye and bombs away. If I'm not mistaken, the drug Restasis for dry eyes has castor oil. I am a huge fan of zinc when it comes trying to help come to the rescue of the eyes. Cod liver oil is a great one, and I love the cruciferous vegetables, kale and Brussels sprouts. Kale and Brussels sprouts for the eyes. And so you can try those. Are you still there? I guess I lost another one. The phone line is once again open at 903-586-5257. And good morning. I'm Dr.
Good morning.
Morgan. Wow, you sound pretty chipper today.
Well, Gordon calling, I'm having some of the same issues. And so now I'm excited to hear what you have to say to me.
All right. What issues are you having?
I've been having GERD, didn't know that I had that. I've been fighting something for about 10 years. Sometimes when I eat, it doesn't matter what time of day it is,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter what it is. But I get like a bubble that has to come out. And sometimes it's just the bubble, like a burp, if you will, but it's an actual bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what's on top of it. It can be solid or liquid. That has to come out. Once this bubble comes out, then I'm okay. I finally went to the doctor. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
I went to the doctor and had the thing on your stomach where they look at it, and I've got.
Where they just kind of scope it.
No, not scope it yet. The pictures.
Okay.
Anyway, it'll come to me. It's early in the morning. I'm bright and chipper, but words fail me. I've got gallstones.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a doctor in Dallas, and he said, "I don't think that's the whole of your problem." So they did do an EGD, the upper, and I've got a hiatal hernia, but of course it can't be, you know, the normal one. Mine's off to the side and up. I went, the doctor that did that told me, "I want you to take Protonix because you've got some gastritis, you've got some GERD, you've got some irritation in there."
I would agree. So would
issues.
You.
Yeah. Of the acid reflux, but I haven't really had a bunch of the heartburn kind of stuff. I have it every now and again. But I told the one doctor, I said, "Well, sometimes when the attack with the bubble comes up, I will drink a concoction of water and apple cider vinegar, lemon juice." And he said, "You don't have a hernia, because if you had a hernia, that would like kill you. You couldn't drink all of that."
I would probably change that to say if you had an ulcer, that would kill you, but not a hernia.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just my opinion, yeah.
Right. So I can't remember the hiatal hernia that they're talking about.
Well, did you get relief when you would drink your concoction?
Some, yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's important to know. And exactly. that was my very first guess when you said it feels like there's a bubble. That's a hiatal hernia right there. And I'm just going to try to oversimplify this. If you need me to flesh it out, I'll be tickled too. You have one muscle on the right side of your spine, and you have another one on the left, and they're called the hip flexors. So if you want to call it the psoas muscle or the psoas muscle or the iliacus or the iliopsoas, it is the only muscle group that connects the upper torso to the lower torso. Mm-hmm. But when those are weak, your stomach kind of gravitates upward and you have a hiatal hernia.
Okay.
And when you have gallstones, it creates what I'm going to call back pressure. So things tend to push up. So digestion always takes place from north, meaning your mouth, down to south, which is the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hiatal hernia can be usually easily corrected. All you do is just take your fingers when you're lying on your back and pull it back in place. This is what the sound it'll make. It'll go pop right back in place. Mm-hmm. But you're going to find out that some of your weaknesses are going to be that if you have an inflamed bile duct, it's probably pushing the stomach upward just because there's chronic irritation. So if you can resolve the gallbladder irritation, well, I mean, what would happen if you didn't even eat anything for the next 3 days? Would the pain go away? Yes.
Okay.
So you can radically alter your diet if you like. If you want to do more of a vegetable juice diet today and eat a couple of apples, tell me if you're a whole lot better the next day. But if you were to get on YouTube and type in hip flexor exercises, I mean, I can't exactly show you over the radio how to test them, but it's very easy. But if you find it very difficult to do those, then I would say that's probably part of the problem, because if you've lost the tone of the hip flexors, then you can't keep the stomach from bulging up or through the diaphragm. And it doesn't belong in the chest. Oh, yeah. Boy, it doesn't belong there. Of course, you know that.
Yeah.
But this is all fixable.
Okay. Well, that's what I've been reading. And it's not the typical hiatal hernia. It's not like where it comes up. And what they're talking about doing is, or one thing they're thinking of is doing a Nissen fundoplication. And I read that, and I'm like, oh. Well,
I think we better try anything that we can try before you do that, because that's pretty drastic.
And I live close to you, but not in the same town as you. And I did visit a chiropractor here in town, and shared with him. And I said, the surgeon that I went to about the gallbladder said that the other doctor wanted to put me on protonics, but the list of things on that, and he said one of the concerns is dementia. And I said, I don't.
Oh, no, that wouldn't be a concern for someone with your brain power. I wouldn't even consider that.
Yeah. Well, and he said, and I agree, because I'm a child of a chiropractor, that, you know, one of the things that the doctors want to do is kill whatever and then try to give you something else to rebuild what they killed, which killed something else. And so the protonics, as I understand it, is something that will kill all the good stuff in the stomach to try to heal things.
Do you sit down all day long?
I pretty much do, because I also have plantar fasciitis. And
boy, this story is just getting better and better. And so when you sit all day long, that causes your hip flexors to become short and contracted and weak. And so, I mean, I'm only telling you what I get to observe in the office every day. When people have what you have, usually they're very, very motivated, because it's very annoying having to deal with all this.
It is.
So,
and for 10 years, it's been very annoying.
And so if you can address the reasons why you may have a very unusual hiatal hernia, but I can't even tell you how many thousands I've pulled back down in place where it's been just fine. I'm not saying that is the most rare one of all time. Maybe yours is. Maybe it's impossible to cure.
Yeah. Well, no, I did.
I doubt it.
And I've been researching. And I heard that one of the things that I saw in there, one guy said, first thing in the morning, drink some water, about 6 ounces or so, coffee cup full, and then get up on the balls of your feet and drop down really hard about 6 or 7 or 8 times.
That's bound to knock the plantar fasciitis back in place, too.
Should be.
Well, but the hip flexors. I know I'm revisiting, but if your psoas muscles are weak, I don't see how you're going to fix your hiatal hernia.
Okay.
So that's just my take on it.
No, I tell you, I'm taking everything other
okay,
than...
Okay, good. But yeah, and those recommendations, anything that works that's non-toxic and safe, you weren't born with a hiatal hernia, it developed over time, but when your hip flexors are weak, that creates a situation where the stomach will literally gravitate up through the diaphragm, and when you have gallbladder... So there's a lot of things to think of, a lot of things. Does aloe vera juice relieve it?
I haven't consumed that.
Well, you can try that instantly to see if it gives you some relief, because it's the natural state of the stomach to be below the diaphragm. And so we have to give increased tone. Do you know what Kegel exercises are?
Yes.
Oh, I would hit those running today. If you can just get on YouTube and type in Kegel exercises to improve the health of a person, and that, you'll find out real quick. I mean, very humbling. I mean, you don't know how many things I've tried myself, but when I've tried those, I thought, Roy, you can't even do those right. So you practice them until you get the hang of it, and you go, oh, that's how you do it. All right, I got it. Got it.
Yes. Okay.
But give that a shot.
If I were to call your office, would your answering machine tell me what your hours are?
No, but I will right now, 8 to
okay.
5.
Monday through Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
But I'm rooting for you.
Thank you, dear.
You're welcome. Thank you, dear.
Have a blessed day.
Blessed day for you, too. Bye-bye. Okay, there's time for another phone call. Actually, there's like about 5.5 minutes, 6 minutes maybe. Yeah, 6. 903-586-5257. This is Health Essentials. And good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I've had regular blood pressure, and now it's class 1 or class 2 hypertension.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
58.
Oh, my goodness, you're a spring chicken.
Yeah, I'm the guy that called you last year with the broken neck twice and the low back crushed by 3,600 pounds.
Oh, no. What was this, a rhinoceros that rolled over you?
No, a septic tank.
Oh, my word.
Swinging and slamming me up against the wall in the hole.
You're talking about a concrete septic tank, right?
Yes.
I went over a lady's house yesterday, and she showed me this hole that her husband dug for his own septic tank by hand. That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whew. All right, so what do you want to do here? Blood pressure?
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you, just because we have a limited amount of time, I'm going to try to tell you what I think is going to be the most effective for you.
Okay.
This morning, I read an article about the use of 3 cups of hibiscus tea a day was every bit as effective at lowering the systolic blood pressure as the medicine was. I'm going
really?
To tell, yeah, and I'm going to tell you which one's cheaper. Hibiscus tea. And I've read studies on how they're using hibiscus tea for cancer treatments in other countries. So if you were to go to the store today, just look for the main ingredient of an herbal tea, hibiscus.
Got it.
Okay.
Good. But did I hear somebody in the background with a very high IQ? I think I did.
That's my wife.
Yes, well, that would be correct then. So hibiscus tea. Now, in my opinion, there aren't many remedies more effective than hawthorn at helping blood pressure.
Hawthorn and hibiscus tea. She's mm-hmm. writing it down right now.
And then, you know, I'm not trying to make one thing sound like a panacea, but there's a vitamin called vitamin K2.
Okay.
I think there's a street drug called K2. I have no idea what that is, but I'm talking about vitamin K2.
Right.
So if you go on a street corner and ask some very clean-cut young men standing around visiting if they have any K2, you probably shouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that anyway.
We probably should get it at the health food store, but it's called vitamin K2. And
okay.
then magnesium and garlic. But those things should give you just a great, great start for great success.
Okay, and my wife uses a lot of garlic because she's a Cajun, you know, cook.
Now, did you mean that complimentary?
Yes.
I thought you did. Good. That's great. Keep it up, man.
I'm from Texas, though.
even better. You mean from from Beaumont?
No, she was born in Kilgore, and that's where we live. And she grew up in New Orleans.
Now, my sister lives in Kilgore.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Mary Ellen. Just say hi to Mary Ellen next time you see her.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
Well, I appreciate your phone call today very much.
We want to come see you so bad, but it's such a long drive.
Gotcha. Well, this is our plan B to do it on the radio, right?
Right.
Yes.
Good deal. Well, y'all have a good day, folks. Love you.
Happy Easter. Love you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Y'all have a great Easter, folks.
God bless you, and
thank you.
Thank God for his resurrection.
Yes, that's the most important thing, and I appreciate your blessings. We all desperately need God in our lives, don't we?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I love you so much. I've been listening
to you. Oh, I love you too. Thank you.
And I know Randy Featherston and visited the radio station.
Now, by the way, you do know that Randy is infinitely better looking than I am, don't you? Ma'am,
no,
I'm not making a joke.
You.
I'm being very serious. Randy is one good looking dude.
Okay.
No, Randy is a great guy. No, I really appreciate your phone call. Y'all have a wonderful weekend, and let me know if this brings the resolution that you're wanting and looking for.
I most certainly will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
How sweet. There's exactly 1 minute left, so I'm going to read this to you. Vitamin K refers to a family of fat-soluble nutrients comprising of the natural occurring vitamin K1, which is phylloquinone, and vitamin K2, which are the minoquinones, or minoquinones. Though vitamin K is largely recognized for its role in blood clotting, that's K1, a small but fast-growing body of science now supports K2's role in bone, brain, skin, prostate, and cardiovascular health. A double-blind, placebo-controlled study found that 180 micrograms per day of K2, I don't think that's much, actually, but that's what they used, for 3 years improved arterial stiffness in postmenopausal women that were associated with a high intake, associating higher intake of K2 with reduced cardiovascular incidence and mortality. That's kind of hard to dispute that. One of the roles of K2 is to make sure that when you consume minerals such as calcium, that it actually gets to where it's supposed to go. It is not good for calcium to build up in your arteries or your cells, where it can be very problematic and even initiate high blood pressure and diabetic complications. But now new studies are showing cancer. Yes, cancer. Everyone have a great weekend. Thank God for his gift of Jesus for our sins. Happy Easter.